Hi, this is What You Say in English, Season 3, Episode 19.
Hello, everyone, and welcome again to Episode 19. Of What You Say in English, the podcast in which I listen to you and give you my professional feedback. Today is going to be very special because I always say that every episode is special. I guess that all the effort that I put into producing every single episode pays off, in a way. But today is going to be super special because I'm going to be talking about Women's International Day. And I created a task for you guys who are preparing for the C1 or C2 exam. And it's going to be Reading and Use of English Part 5. If you remember, Reading and Use of English Part 5 is the first long reading. Now, you have to remember that the Reading and Use of English is a complete compilation of different tasks that will cover not only grammar, but also reading. Now, the first part is part of the reading, actually. The first part is the lexical grammatical task in which you have to complete a text with four options. Every gap, you have eight gaps, and every gap contains four options. So basically, that counts for reading. Then you have use of English per se, in which you have to complete, for example, a similar text, similar to part one. But in this case, the eight gaps, you don't have any options. So basically, it's more grammatical. Then you have the word formation task, and then you have the keyword transformation. So they're all basically very grammatical. Then you have part five, in the C1 and the C2 exam. And in both parts, you have a long reading, and then you have six questions after that reading that will test your understanding of that text in a way that you have to see whether you understand the general idea. You have to understand the implicit idea, explicit ideas, and a bunch of other things. Okay, so stay tuned because this episode is going to be packed with lots of tips and advice for you guys who are preparing for this part of the test exactly. But before we get started, I would like to talk to you about the multiple choice reading questions. Now, a multiple choice reading comprehension task is a type of assessment that measures a person's ability to comprehend a given text. These tasks typically consist of a passage of a text followed by a set of multiple choice questions that test your understanding of the passage. Now, the questions, and listen to this because this is the whole secret of this task, is designed to assess a range of reading comprehension skills, including, but not exclusively, the reader's ability to understand, this is number one, understand the main idea of a passage, then identify key details and supporting evidence, make inferences, and draw conclusions, recognize the author's purpose and tone, and identify the meaning of words and phrases in context. Now, these things, and I mentioned five things, but these five things are not always assessed at different levels. For example, if you're coming from B2, you would probably be asked to identify a word and see what the meaning of the word is in context. If you go from B2 to C1 and C2, then the text will probably ask you to identify more complex questions in which you have to draw conclusions. Basically, you have to read between the lines. It's you have to see what the purpose was, and you have to be able to guess the type of question by the wording of the question. So questions will be asking you, for example, in this paragraph, this is going to be this, and what is the intention of the author? The author is using this to exemplify what, and things like that. I will go over this particular exercise that I have today with question by question and telling you what each question is testing. Remember that this task that you will be able to download today is a task designed by me. I'm not claiming it's perfect. Bear in mind, I haven't tested it yet. You guys are my guinea pig, and I'm testing the task with you. I did make it available yesterday on LinkedIn through all my contacts and other teachers and other professionals to see if they could use the task and give me a little bit of feedback. But bear in mind that this is probably not a perfect task, but I did it with all my love for you guys. Bear in mind that this is not a perfect task, but not a perfect reading. I, adapted it from an article that I found at the Washington Post. I thought it was very interesting, very appropriate to celebrate Women's International Day. And it was a very moving article for me because it's basically a call to arms and it's basically trying to remember what the day stands for. Now, the rationale behind the design of a multiple choice options reading is to provide several possible answers that could plausibly be correct. And of course, the level of difficulty comes from here, because as a test taker, you have to be able to discern, to understand, for example, look at the four options and see which ones are not true. But only one of those options will be the best answer based on the information presented in the passage. Now, this is very important because you cannot let yourself go with what you already know about the topic. I usually tell my students that when they know a lot about a topic, they sometimes let their judgment be clouded by what they already know. And that can be dangerous because sometimes they make assumptions that are not in the text. And you have to base your judgment from what is based in the text, nothing else. But this kind of exercise will allow you as a test taker to demonstrate your ability to use critical thinking skills to evaluate the information presented in the passage and choose the best answer from a set of options. Now, let me talk to you about the distractors. The distractors are options that look very plausible. They look like, and actually they use a lot of words and expressions from the reading, but they don't answer directly the question, or they half answer the question. Now, the distractors or incorrect answers in the multiple choice options are designed to mimic the common errors that test takers may make when interpreting the passage. This means that the incorrect answers may include information that is true, but not relevant to the question. Remember that relevant in English also has the meaning of connected. So information that is partially true, but not the best answer, or information that is entirely false, but sounds plausible. I have tried to include a little bit of everything, so I hope that it's tricky enough to keep you interested and that it encourages you to improve, you know, your reading skills. Now, in summary, multiple choice reading questions and tasks are designed to assess a range of reading comprehension skills, and the design of the multiple choice options aims to test critical thinking skills and mimic common errors of interpretation. Now, the way that I'm going to do this episode is like this. You are going to listen to the whole article. I actually produce a nice video, and I'm going to make it available on the episode description so you guys can watch it. And if you want to save it later and you want to use it for classes or anything, feel free to use it. Okay, so remember that I did it just for you. So after this break, after the first segment that I'm doing now, you're going to listen to the article. I make sure that you download the task from the episode description today. You will listen to the task. You can do the reading while you listen if you want to, or if you want to do it as an exam task, feel free to do it. So after you listen to the article, then I'm going to proceed explaining the answers and how everything works. And that's going to be today's episode. Okay, so stay tuned. Let's continue.
International Women's Day has been celebrated on March 8th for over a century to highlight the plight of women in the workplace and fight for reforms. Over the years, women have used this day to help win concessions on issues such as a 5-day, 40-hour work week, child labor laws, safety codes, and a minimum wage. However, in America, it has become an occasion to generically celebrate women and girls on social media while ignoring its labor history roots and morphing into something divorced from its original purpose. The full promise of the women's labor movement has not been fulfilled in America with regards to paid family leave, affordable childcare, and equitable pay. The first National Women's Day was declared by American socialists in 1909 with a focus on workers' rights and suffrage. The event took place in New York City on the last Sunday of February. a day when working women could attend. Charlotte Perkins Gilman, a noted feminist, socialist, and author, gave a speech calling for women's influence and freedom beyond their households.
It is true that a woman's duty is centered in her home and motherhood, but home should mean the whole country and not be confined to three or four rooms of a city or a state.
The protest laid the groundwork for the largest strike by women workers that fall. At 9 a.m. on a cold morning in November 1909, thousands of garment workers walked out of their shops in Manhattan, Brooklyn, and the Bronx and marched to their union headquarters at 151 Clinton Street. Their demands included a 52-hour work week, higher pay, and an end to workplace abuses such as unsafe working conditions and what we later came to understand as sexual harassment. In 1910, German socialist Clara Zetkin proposed codifying International Women's Day at an International Socialist Congress in Copenhagen. Delegates from 17 countries unanimously agreed. The next year, more than a million women took part in this holiday across Europe, demanding political and worker rights. Over the next decade, International Women's Day became a day for protests against the burgeoning imperialist war in Europe. In 1917, Russian women demanded peace, land, and bread. Such protests helped to spark the Russian Revolution and earned women the right to vote and run for office that same year. Throughout the 20th century, March 8th continued to inspire protests for women's working and political rights around the globe. Under threat of arrest, torture, rape, and death, women in Nazi-occupied Italy in 1944 and 1945 walked out of factories and homes en masse demanding better wages, maternity leave, childcare, and an end to German requisitioning of Italian-made goods. Even Nazi fascists capitulated to the power of these women offering shorter hours, hot soup, and heating fuel so that the women would continue to work. Women workers were also instrumental in the Allied war effort, and their organizational initiatives played a role in winning the war. In many northern Italian cities during World War II, these efforts culminated in women taking up arms and securing factories during the final bloody battles against Germany as Allied forces advanced. These organized demonstrations then gave women political power in the new Italian government. Following the war, they secured political representation, labor unions, childcare assistance, and more equitable pay. On March 8th, Italian women carried the yellow mimosa, an early spring bloom, to represent solidarity with women throughout the world. This flower became a reminder during the war of their obligation to fight for a better future. Even today, many countries celebrate women and mothers on this day with flowers, but also annual protests for equal rights and better pay. Yet despite this international popularity, International Women's Day is only nominally celebrated in the United States due to its association with socialist ideals, which are seen as at odds with American individualism. This was particularly true in the decades after World War II, when because of the Cold War, a harmful divide emerged between feminist movements and women's labor movements in America. The intersectional bonds of early feminists, women of all classes fighting for suffrage and worker protections side by side, loosened. And when a mainstream feminism reemerged in the 1960s, it left many women of color and working class women behind, although they later fought for inclusion. But the pandemic has exposed that the United States has a long way to go in supporting workers who are women, particularly working mothers. It is telling that the United States loves to celebrate mothers in May with flowers and brunch, and with similarly apolitical nods, mostly on social media on International Women's Day. But it has largely ignored real policy shifts that the rest of the world has adopted and continues to advocate for on March 8th to support working mothers. Recent challenges around mothering and working have highlighted how these issues are deeply interconnected, and International Women's Day offers an opportunity to address issues such as insufficient childcare, poor workplace protections, suppressed pay, and a lack of voting protections. This March 8th should be an occasion to return to the true history of International Women's Day in the United States, as it began in New York City in 1909, with female workers and mothers fighting for change in the streets.
Okay, so I hope you've had time to do the reading task. And if you're getting to this point, it's because I'm going to tell you what the answers are. Of course, the document that you downloaded also contained the text that I'm going to be reading for you guys and the answers and explanations. So you can use it later, or you can share it with a friend who wants to practice with the exam. Now, let's go answer question by question. Now, when you look at the first question, it's, what has International Women's Day become in America, according to the author? This question is testing basically your understanding of the details to the question, to the reading. And in this case, the author is arguing that International Women's Day in America has become divorced from its original purpose of highlighting the plight. The plight means the problems, the issues, the struggles that women in the workplace have been suffering and fighting because they've been fighting for reforms. Instead, it has become a generic occasion to celebrate women and girls on social media without acknowledging its labor history roots. Now, of course, this is option B. The author is suggesting that the full promise of the women's labor movement has not been fulfilled in America, particularly regarding issues such as paid family leave, affordable childcare, and equitable pay. Therefore, the author advocates for returning to the true history of International Women's Day in the United States as a day for female workers and mothers to fight for change in the streets. Now, option A is not correct because the author suggests that in America, International Women's Day has lost its focus on advocating for change and bringing attention to the struggles of working women. Option C is not correct either because the author indicates that the full promise of women's labor movement has not been fulfilled in America, suggesting that the ultimate goals of the movement have not been achieved. Of course, option D is not correct because the author does not mention hard-earned benefits on any specific rights that women have gained through the labor movement. Instead, the author is highlighting the continuing struggles that women face in areas such as paid family leave, affordable childcare, and equitable pay. So you can see that this is basically more about the details to the question. I mean, it's testing how much you can understand the details. Now, for question two, the author's attitude towards the event and Gilman's speech is neutral or objective. So this is, of course, option C. The author simply provides an account of the event and the speech without expressing any personal opinions or judgment. The scope of the protest is to go beyond their households. Now, option A, in this case, is not correct because the author does not express any disagreement with Gilman's speech. In fact, the author includes a quote from Gilman's speech and presents it as an important moment in the event. Option C is not correct either because there is very little to support the idea that the author agrees with Gilman. Although the inclusion of Gilman's speech might suggest that the author supports the idea of women's empowerment, the overall tone is informative and neutral. You cannot take it as a way that the author agrees with her. Of course, it's giving support, but as a more neutral commentary. Option D is not correct because the author does not express any opinion on the realism or feasibility of Gilman's speech. You have to be careful with the wording because one word that is not correct makes the option incorrect. The author presents the speech as an important moment in the event and does not make any sarcastic or mocking remarks about it. Now, for question three, the correct answer is A, and the paragraph explains that over the next decade, after the codification of International Women's Day, the day became a platform for protests against the imperialist war in Europe. This exemplifies the point that the International Women's Day became an excuse to fight against increasing conflicts. The reference to the imperialist war in Europe suggests that the day became a platform for women to voice their opposition to war and demand peace. This showed that the day was not only about fighting for political and workers' rights, but also for broader social and political issues affecting women. So this is what you get from the text. Now, option B is partially true, and this is the part in which you have to be super careful, because as the paragraph mentions, the holiday was initially proposed for workers' rights and suffrage. But, you know, in this case, however, The reference to the imperialist war in Europe shows that the day became a platform for broader social and political issues, just beyond any workers' rights. Option C is not completely accurate, so this is also partially true, because the paragraph mentions that the Russian Revolution, as a result of the protests sparked by the day, rather than the day being directly linked to the revolution. So it's not a direct correlation. So you have to be careful with that wording. Option D is also inaccurate because the paragraph mentions the day's significant impact on political matters, such as women's right to vote and run for office in Russia. So you got to be careful. I think this one was particularly difficult. After I designed the question, I thought it was like, oh, this is tricky. So continuing with number four, the correct option is D. And this can be inferred from the statement in the passage that says, even Nazi fascists capitulated to the power of these women offering shorter hours, hot soup, and heating fuel so that the women could continue to work. The fact that the Nazi fascists yielded, that's the word used in the option, it means, by the way, capitulated. To capitulate, it means to surrender. To the women's demands shows that the protests were effective in bringing about change. So that's why D is the correct option. Now, option A is partially correct, as the passage states that women were under threat of arrest, torture, rape, and death. However, this does not mean that all women were subjected to these things. Now, being subjected means that they actually happened, only that they faced the risk of them. So they suffered the risk, but it never actually happened. They faced that threat, but it didn't happen. Option B is not correct. The passage states that women workers were instrumental in the Allied war effort and that their organizational initiatives played a major role in winning the war. Option C is not correct either, as the passage states that women secured political representation, labor unions, childcare assistance, and more equitable pay following the war, which suggests that their protests were effective in improving their working conditions and political power. In the case of five, you know, the answer is B, the author suggests that International Women's Day is only nominally celebrated in the United States. Now, the expression nominally comes from name. So they only celebrate it because of the name of it, not what really stands for. Now, the word nominally is a giveaway in this case. So you had to be careful. So remember that adverbs always express some, well, not always, but on many occasions, they express an opinion. So nominally in this case is just by name because of its association with socialist ideas, and which are seen as at odds with American individualism. This suggests that Americans view International Women's Day with skepticism because it does not align with their core values of individualism and, of course, capitalism. Now, option A, in this case, is not correct because the passage suggests the opposite. Americans view International Women's Day with skepticism, not support. Now, option C is only partially correct. The passage mentions that protests are part of the celebration in many countries, but it does not suggest that this is the reason why Americans view International Women's Day with skepticism. So you gotta be careful with that. In option D, of course, it's not correct because the passage suggests that early feminist movements in America were inclusive of women of all classes fighting for suffrage and workers' protection side by side, but that later mainstream feminism left many women of color and working class women behind. The passage does not suggest that Americans view International Women's Day as a day to celebrate the inclusion of racial minorities. They already did that. And when we talk about the final question, question six is C. The answer is C. The author is urging their readership to address more pressing issues than just celebrating International Women's Day with apolitical nods and gestures. The author highlights that the United States has largely ignored real policy shifts that the rest of the world has adopted to support working mothers, such as insufficient childcare, poor workplace protections, suppressed pay, and a lack of voting protections. The author wants readers to use International Day, International Women's Day, as an opportunity to address these pressing issues that are deeply interconnected with mothering and working. Option A in this case is incorrect because the author does not mention whether Americans are aware of how much other countries have done to advocate for women's rights. So there's no reference to that. The author only points out that the United States has largely ignored policy shifts that other countries have adopted to support working mothers. Option B is incorrect because the author does not emphasize on the need to celebrate all mothers. And you got to be careful with words, options that include the words like never, all, everything, because you have to include everything, so, or nothing. So you got to be careful when options contain those words. Not only those who work. Instead, the author highlights the need to address the pressing issues that working mothers face. And lastly, option D is incorrect because the author already emphasizes in the body of the text that more can be done to implement real policy changes that support working mothers. The concluding paragraph does not add any new information regarding the need for policy changes. Instead, it urges readers to address pressing issues beyond the festive part of International Women's Day. So, in conclusion, did you find the reading challenging? I hope you have found it challenging enough to sort of like try to step out of your comfort zone. Remember that the way that I design tasks, basically, they can be challenging, but I want them to be also a learning opportunity. Remember that don't take it as a real exam task, because obviously the only real exam tasks are the ones that come from Cambridge, not even other textbooks or course books like, you know, from Macmillan or Oxford University Press or, you know, those course books. They do a great job and there are professional people behind it. But there will never be Cambridge tasks. You know, Cambridge tasks are designed, they're talked about, I mean, they're discussed, they are tested, pre-tested before they're made available in real exams. So they go through a very long process of making sure that the task is all right, that the level is all right. So in my case, I'm just one person. Of course, I will never aspire to create a task that actually resembles or is the same level of difficulty of a Cambridge task. But at least I always try to make tasks that are a learning opportunity for you to get new vocabulary or at least practice the reading skills that are required for these kind of tasks. Okay, so my intention is that you can appreciate that. You can appreciate the effort of trying to get you to learn new words, new vocabulary, new expressions. And this article is wonderful because it contains a lot of wonderful words that you can use not only for your speaking, but also for your writing. So stay tuned for the final part. So this is the end of today's episode. I hope you've liked it a lot. And I'm sorry if it came as a surprise, if you were not ready to do a reading and use of English task. I apologize for that. I know that many times the purpose of a podcast is just to listen and disconnect. You might probably be running right now, or you're probably doing something else and you're just listening to my voice at this time. But I want to take the opportunity to teach you how everything possible and related to the exam. So I hope you can take advantage of this. And if you're a teacher as well, you can use this task with your student. If you have any feedback, remember that you have my email in my podcast description and on my social networks on Facebook and now on TikTok. And by the way, the number of followers is increasing exponentially. I'm just shocked by the wonderful reception I've had on TikTok. People are loving the videos that I'm uploading, actually videos in which you can do a little practice with the speaking test part, especially the individual part. I know that other parts of the exam are very difficult to test because they require more interaction, and it's impossible to do that in a video. Like trying to take turns, and it's When it's a very interactive task, let's say, for example, part 3 and part 4 of the speaking test, especially for the C1, because the C2 only has 3 parts. But doing something interactive is literally impossible. So I'm uploading videos with the individual long turns for the speaking sections of different levels. I have uploaded B1 videos, B1, B2, C1, and C2. And I hope you can do your rounds and check out my TikTok profile and just watch the videos, and I hope you like them. And of course, my promise to continue producing a lot of more material for you guys. Right now, I'm in the process of doing mock exams at the academy where I work. I'm a little busy. I'm correcting exams. I'm giving feedback. We have a lot of contingency of a lot of students who want to take the exam at the exam center, which is attached to the academy where I work. Okay, so remember that. Have a little patience with me. I'm trying my best to upload an episode every week to keep to that promise. But bear in mind that sometimes I might not be able to upload an episode, and for that, I apologize in advance. So bear in mind. I just want you to have a little patience with me. It's always a pleasure to get to you guys. And remember that Anchor now belongs to Spotify, and you will see lots of changes. In my case, for example, from my end as a podcaster, I'm seeing a lot of changes. The software that I'm using and everything that I'm using to upload the episodes, it's changing a little bit. And now I think there are more possibilities. If you're listening to the podcast through Spotify, you will be able to see more options that other people might not be able to enjoy. For example, the polls and questions that you can answer. Last week's episode, somebody left a wonderful opinion on the episode. So I will post them. The people who sent their opinions, I will post the comments so you can read and interact with the rest of the people, the listenership of my podcast. And thank you very much for joining me another week. And until next week, bye-bye.